What's going on? Mark Grody with you on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, here with you until 10 o'clock. How about it, man? I'm officially right now excited about what's going down at Wrigley Field tomorrow. The Wrigley 2.0 opener, 100% capacity, Cubs and Cardinals, and the Cubs right now tied for first place in the National League Central. They are deadlocked with the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers and Cubs right now both 35-27. The Brewers beat the Reds today 7-2. The St. Louis Cardinals 32-30. They are three back of that first place pace being set by the Cubs and the Brewers, and it goes down tomorrow at Wrigley Field. Cubs Cardinals 1:20. Zach Zabin's pregame 12:45, and then it's Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer after that with the call of the game and the gauntlet update. They've got this three-game series against the Cardinals, again, starting tomorrow. It's the only day game of the series at Wrigley Field because they've got the Fox night game on Saturday, and then they've got the ESPN Sunday night game as well, which, as always, will create wonderful content for everybody in town because of the A-Rod factor. And then after what should be just I think it is appropriate to call it a hype series against the Cardinals because of full fan capacity, and then it is on to the New York Mets. Cubs at the Mets for a four-game series. The starting pitchers for tomorrow, Kyle Hendricks, 7-4 with a 4.59 ERA against Johan Oviedo, who has a 5.25 ERA right now for the St. Louis Cardinals. That said, Ian Happ, the Cubs' starting center fielder, a regular on the Score and specifically on the Bernstein and Rahimi show. Let's listen to about 10 minutes of this before we bring in Les Grobstein to finish out the show tonight. I wanted to hear or bring this to you, this little chunk here, with Layla Rahimi asking the first question to Mr. Ian Happ.
To call us on your off day is not just nice, it's appreciated. I'm sure you guys got back from San Diego pretty late, but it was a happy flight. What's that feeling when you are on the team plane, you get the day off, and then you know you're facing the Cardinals coming up after taking two or three from the Padres on the West Coast?
Yeah, that was a big way to end that road trip. You know, West Coast swings can be difficult. I know since I've been here, the Cubbies haven't had, even our best teams haven't had too much success on those West Coast swings. So to be able to go, you know, 3-4 in that trip and then obviously end on a high note, taking 2 out of 3, winning another series and being able to head back to Chicago to a full capacity Wrigley Field, feeling pretty good about the way we ended that road trip. So team was in a good mood, good spirits, got in late last night, but everyone now got to enjoy the off day and kind of regroup.
Not just full capacity Wrigley Field. We were just talking about that. And having done this now for 26 years and remembering what that place can be like for a big weekend series against a longtime rival, Wrigley Field is going to be crackling this weekend. I hope some of these young guys, some people who have never experienced this really understand the energy that is going to be there this weekend.
Yeah, I think, you know, the weather being the way it's supposed to be should really help too. And there's not only young players, but there's coaches that have been here for 2 years now that haven't seen Wrigley like this at full capacity. So this will be their first go around with it too. So it'll be pretty cool just to see everybody's reaction and kind of hear people talking about how loud it was, because it's going to be bonkers. And I hope Wrigleyville, I hope the whole area is just, it's just bumping. But the Saturday, Sunday night games, a little bit different for a Cubs-Cards middle of the summer series.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, according to your podcast, I know you said you never have played shortstop, but you're getting a little closer. Ended up at second base. What was that like for you?
It was great to be back in the dirt. It's been, it's been a while since I played second base. And, it just happened that I could help the team in that spot. Was able to take ground balls for a few days and kind of get my feet under me and held my own out there. Didn't do anything stupid. So that's always the goal.
No, you made the defensive play of the game, at least according to the radio broadcast here on the Score. They gave you the play of the day for that little sliding stop.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate the I think I made it look a little tougher than it was, but that's also part of it. Yeah, you got to, when you come into a new position, you got to make the routine ones look tough so that you can sell yourself a little bit.
How about the throw in San Francisco too? That was a dart. Did you know when it left your hand that that thing was true?
Yeah, that was one of those ones that felt good coming out. Kind of the perfect ball for me. The one hopper is the one that sets me up best to throw, and was able to let that one go. And, you know, Jay and I talked about that Posey scored in the first and on, or maybe it was first inning, and you know, Jay had a chance at him and the ball kind of ran on him just a hair. And we talked about it, not going to let that happen to us twice. So was able to cut him down and kind of keep the game where it was, which was ended up being a big deal in the end.
Yeah, you, Darvish's first time through the order yesterday was pretty much what we've seen out of him for, I'd say, at this point, calendar the last 2 years. But to face him in San Diego, and he seems to be in a really comfortable and happy place. He's messing with Anthony Rizzo after the game on Twitter. He was messing with the writers a little bit, too, when he was here. What have you seen out of him, and what's it like now facing him on the other side, knowing what they're contending for in San Diego?
Yeah, he's a guy who's not easy to face because he can attack you in so many different ways, and he has. You know, he has a lot of pitches, but he also, you know, having played with him and watched him, obviously, you know that he has some different sequences that he likes to go to, but you just don't know exactly which one he's going to pick. So that makes it a little bit difficult, just trying to think along with him and trying to figure out where he's going to go. He looks like he's super happy in a great spot. I thought him using Riz's walk-up song was hilarious. I'm super happy for him. I mean, just an awesome guy, and to see his progress here in Chicago and what he did for us the last couple of years and carrying us and being just a workhorse. And I think we all really appreciated that and are happy about how he's doing now and how happy he is, and to still have Victor. That battery is awesome.
I'm wondering what you're thinking about the current sort of national baseball story about the apparent pending crackdown on pitchers using substances. Because on the one hand, you're a hitter. That's your job. You get paid to hit. On the other hand, you're also a player and a player rep. And you're in a brotherhood with some of these pitchers. And I read some piece of a data-informed piece by Joe Sheehan. I'll send it to you. I'll pass it along because I think you'd find it really interesting. It is him saying that, yeah, offense is down in baseball, but it's not because of substances. The strikeout rate is too high and has been too high, but the primary reason why offense is down is hits and runs on contact. The ball is deadened. The ball isn't moving as well when it is hit. So it's independent of bat missing. That's the reason offense is down. And he contends that owners, that and what MLB is going to do is bang the drums here to demonize players, to say, oh, cheating players or players are outside the rules, to get public sentiment against players going into a negotiation. How do you deal with some of the complex emotions and responsibilities that you have?
Yeah, there's a lot of different issues floating right now. I think it's good. I'll start with substance abuse or the stuff on the ball. I think it's good that players are having conversations about it. I think it's good that some of the rules will be enforced. I mean, it's in the rule book. It's not anything that's new. And I think it's good that players are having honest conversations about the best way to move forward, about making the game a little bit more clean and at least having a little bit more clear rules about what is and what is not allowed. And the balls, I mean, they told us coming into the season the balls were going to be a little bit more dead. You know, if you're going for more offense and excitement, I don't know why they would deaden the balls. But they did tell us coming into the season that they were going to be, I believe it was a little bit smaller. Seams are definitely higher and travel maybe 5 to 10 feet less far. And I know the conspiracy out there is that there's a lot of hitters coming onto the market and a lot of big money hitters, and that, you know, some keeping some of those numbers down makes sense. Now, that could or could not be true, but I know that guys, just as you feel the baseball, the seams are higher. And I think that pitchers should also take a little bit of an exception to that, because we've had guys with blisters. You know, those seams are so high that guys trying to throw sliders and cutters, you know, whatever it is with their fingers on some of these seams, the hand isn't built to take that, especially when that's not the same baseball you've been throwing for a number of years. So I just hope that moving forward, there's more regulation, that there's a standard that we can use so that it stops changing every year. I know all of my seasons, maybe not between 19 and 20, but 17 to 18 changed, 18 to 19 it changed. I don't know about 20, but now 21, the ball's changed. So there just has to be more consistency with the ball that's being put into play.
So if this is all changing midseason and we're hearing all these narratives, and you mentioned the blisters, of course we're thinking about Albert Alcilay and what we just saw out of him and his blister problem. That hits close to home. What's the recourse that players have, or even the reporting that they can do to say the supplies that we have right now are affecting things in a negative way?
Yeah, Albert had a blister. You know, Jake Arrieta was out for 10 days early in the season with a blister. Same thing, trying to throw his cutter, and where his thumb went on the seam, it just larger seams ripped it open. So, you know, it's something that we don't want players and you know, our best pitchers going on the disabled list or the injured list because they are throwing a baseball that is different from what it's been in the past. And so, like I said, I just think some of those regulations need to be more uniform. And we need to know going into every season what the baseball is going to look like. And it makes it more difficult on front offices to put together a team when they don't know exactly what baseball we're playing with, because front offices will make decisions based on what ball we're using, whether to go get hitters or pitchers or how hitters are going to play. You know, there's guys that had a ton of success in some of those seasons where the ball flew 5 feet farther that, you know, the homers turned to outs or the outs turned to homers. So to be able to kind of give those guys a little bit more freedom or clarity to go out and build a roster makes a lot of sense too.
Oh yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. You know, average home run length, that's going to make a difference when the ball travels a certain amount of space on average. But when it comes to what we're talking about with the injuries, can you guys report things? Is there a process that you go through, or maybe the front office goes through, to say, hey, we've had a lot of blister problems, for example, this might be an issue right now, is there something we can do?
Yeah, I know it's something that can be talked about. I don't know that there's necessarily a recourse, but I know there was a, I don't know if it was 18 or there's another year where blisters were a big problem because of the change in the ball, and it's something that's voiced. But, you know, in the moment, there's nothing that really can be changed. The ball's not going to be changed midseason, and it's not gonna have a huge impact now, but it's something that guys just have to be aware of. And that's, you know, as players, that's what we do. We continue to adapt to however the game's changing.
That is Cub center fielder Ian Happ on 670 The Score with Bernstein and Rahimi today. And the word of the day, boys and girls, from that conversation, the word that I saw and then didn't stop seeing it, standardize, uniformity, of everything, of the, like, that's baseball, that's one of baseball's problems. Standardize the strike zone. Standardize the sticky stuff and what one is allowed to use when pitching. Pine tar for the batters. That is standardized, I think. I don't think there's been a pine tar incident with a batter since George Brett. Look it up, kids. What if baseball stadiums decided to standardize and there are, you know, baseball dimensions are the same in every ballpark? I don't know. It's like there just needs to be this massive, it's such a good word used by Ian Happ, there needs to be this massive standardizing of a lot of things in baseball. And it can be tricky because things standardization could change from year to year based on rules that you may implement, things as simple and or complicated as video review, which, you know, is something that is standardized, but it could change as well in the future in terms of technology and in terms of what is reviewable and, hey, what is not. And that's all part of standardizing and uniformity. But I'm kind of getting away from the basics of this standardizing idea. Strike zone, sticky stuff, the damn baseball. Like, I just love it. And I've said it before. Baseball, Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, if it needs a face, they cheated on their starting pitchers last year, their pitchers last year, by not regulating the baseball, allowing for it to be a juice baseball, which it was, and nobody did anything about it in baseball, and they knew it existed and may have even asked for it. So essentially, they're cheating on their pitchers. And now this year, they are telling their pitchers to stop cheating. So it's just this beautiful back and forth between baseball and the players. And then, oh, by the way, new collective bargaining agreement is soon too. So there, you know, there just could be a strike to stop all of this peripheral nonsense and get us into good old fashioned, when is baseball going to be played again? But that is down the road. And man, I just took this in all sorts of different directions just now. Wasn't necessarily expecting that to occur, but it did. And there's nothing we could do about it at this point. But one thing we can do is, after a break, I am going to, it's time for transition, which means it's time for Les Grobstein. And if you have a question you would like to ask of Grobber, anything, 312-644-6767. Again, 312-644-6767. But Grobber and I will chat next. We'll talk about the Cubs, the Bears, the Sox, but they're playing right now. Whatever, the Bulls. We'll see what comes up with Les Grobstein next on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Packers suck!
I like this song. Probably let it go a little bit longer. You're running up that hill? Is that what this is?
Yes, sir.
Mark Grody. Yeah. See, and it studs. We vibe, man. We vibe with music. We do. Mark Grody back with you on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is producer Adam Studzinski, a.k.a. Studs, a.k.a. Trash Panda. He's actually only the Trash Panda on Saturdays when it's
only between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. on Saturdays.
Yeah, it's a very specific window during which you transfer into Trash Panda. A Trash Panda is a raccoon, by the way. It's a long story. You got to listen Saturdays, 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. And I know that you listen midnight to 5 a.m. every day on The Score, because one of the goats of our industry, Les Grobstein, holds it down midnight to 5 on Score Overnight every night. What's going on, Grobber?
Hey, Mark, what's going on indeed? How are you?
Nothing. I am well. Hey, I am, what a perfect opportunity here. I am going to, tomorrow, I am leaving for a vacation. I'm going to Nashville. I have never been to Nashville. Certainly
never vacationed. Music City, USA. Yeah, it's
yeah,
pretty
man.
Cool.
You've been there?
Oh, many times. I've seen both Northwestern and Notre Dame play against Vanderbilt at Vanderbilt Stadium down there.
Uh-huh.
And the first time I saw the Bears play down there, they were playing against the Tennessee Oilers. They had just moved from Houston. They hadn't changed their name to the Titans yet. And that was at Vanderbilt Stadium. Then a couple of years later, they got the new stadium there, and they changed the name to Titans. And I actually, we went down there when the Bears played in that stadium, the LP Stadium, for the first time ever. And that was one of the weirdest football games ever. The Bears were trailing by 3, and they got a field goal with about, 15 seconds left. So they forced overtime. And it went back and forth and back and forth. And finally, they punted the ball deep into Titan territory. and their quarterback, Billy Bolick, was playing, and he dropped back into the end zone. He got hit, coughed up the football. Tennessee recovered. The Bears fell on it, and it was a safety. So the Bears won by 2 points in overtime on a safety, and you just never see that happen in any kind of football game. But a safety actually ended the football game, and the Bears won. That was the first time we saw the Bears play in that new stadium.
And there was probably a ton of Bears fans, I assume.
Oh, there were quite a few, but that is a very, very well attended. I mean, I've also I was down there for a playoff game one time when the Titans were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. I covered that for the network. Uh-huh. The game ended. And then the hockey arena is not that far from there at all. And I happened to have a Blackhawk pass, so I just walked in, and nobody even checked me out. And so saw the last two periods of that game. Because
be careful, man. You get in trouble for that, Grobber. You get in trouble. You do that now.
I didn't then.
Okay.
I mean, no, if I had some kind of a credential, and if they didn't check me, and then I got into the press box without any problem, that's their problem, not mine, right?
Right. I guess so. I mean, don't ask, don't tell. I mean,
I got in there and got into the press box, and you'll never believe who was sitting in there. It was Tony Amonte, who was the former Blackhawk.
And, yeah, of course.
They were playing the Blackhawks the very next day in Chicago, and so he was out injured, and he was in Chicago as well, so it was kind of weird seeing him in that hockey game in Nashville. By the way, the food down there is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, one other sports thing, and then I want to hear more about the food. One of the most pivotal Blackhawks game in its franchise's history occurred there. The game where at Marian Hossa, I think it might have been, a first-round series where Marian Hossa gets the bad penalty, and then when his penalty was over, he jumps out of the box and scores the goal, and the Blackhawks ultimately got a dramatic
win. That's not
win.
Even the whole story there.
That's the abbreviated. I was waiting for you to jump in. I mean, you're just leaving me out here sweating, trying to tell the story. Go ahead, take over.
The Titans were up by a goal with about a minute to play, and all they had to do, and there was a penalty against the Blackhawks, so the Titans also had a man advantage.
They were
told by their head coach, hey, we have enough goals, just don't do anything stupid. So the puck was deep in the Blackhawk zone, and all they had to do was just keep it in the Blackhawk end, and the Titans would have run out. They didn't need to try to score a power play goal. All they had to do was run out the clock. Well, somebody got stupid, and it was Errett, who is a pretty good player, and he tried to get cute, and he passed the puck from behind the Blackhawk net, or behind the Tennessee net, and what goes the other way, it gets stolen by Patrick Kane, and he brings it all the way down, and he scores a shorthanded goal to tie the game up. All they had to do was keep it down at the other end, and time would have run out. So they went to the inside, and of course, Hossa was still in the box. The penalty expires to him in overtime, and when he comes out, they end up getting the game-winning goal, and the place went nuts. And then that not only tied up the series when they managed to get that overtime goal, but then they won it.
And that was wasn't that a first-round series?
It was. Marty Errett was a really good player,
Erat.
One of the best.
Martin
it was
Erat,
a very stupid,
right.
stupid play that he came up with.
More like Erat, right?
Kinda.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, so that was in Nashville. So, I'm trying to think of other significant Chicago moments, and there's not a hell of a lot of them because that's obviously more of a college town in terms of sports, and Tennessee Titans, same with Nashville,
as far as the hockey team, the fans are pretty, and by the way, they've really become Blackhawk haters down there. And the Hawks had owned them for quite a while, but then the last time they ended up meeting in the playoffs, they got beat 1-0 in game 1 at home. They didn't win a game. They ended up getting swept. And I guarantee you that other than maybe getting to the finals, which they did one time, the Titan fans loved beating the Blackhawks in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Let me ask you this. Have you ever been taunted at a game or a venue, like somebody just trying to, I guess what is now commonly referred to as trolling, did anybody taunt you back in the day that you remember?
Nah, they couldn't because they had no, I was almost always in the press box and they had no access to where I was at.
Right. Well, I don't know why anybody would have. Well, I guess if there was Packers fans in attendance, they might taunt
you. Put
you
enough alcohol
you.
In your body, I guess anything could happen, right?
No, but I'm trying to think of what people in the audience get most angry about that you do. Or what gets you angry, like the most angry? Or what teams? I know like the Packers are obviously a huge trigger for you. The Packers are. The Dallas Cowboys, the Lakers, right? Down, down, down. Lakers going down. The Lakers trigger you, right? So how now that's
no in '91 when I was in LA for the three games 3, 4, and 5 during the Hawks. I mean during the Bulls
down,
and the
down,
Lakers
down.
Series.
Lakers going down.
When I was down there for that, the Bulls had already tied the series up 1-1. And I know a lot of fans were pretty confident. They still had Magic Johnson. They had James Worthy. They had a very young player by the name of Vlade Divac and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
But the Bulls found themselves down by 2 points because Vlade Divac had made a three-point play. They were down by one. And he got a bucket and got fouled, made the free throw, and with a two-point lead. And so the Bulls got it back. And Jordan hit a shot at the buzzer to tie it and force overtime. And then Scottie Pippen and Jordan took over in overtime, and they won it. And then the next game, game number 4, the Bulls kind of blew them out. And people around there, they had an idea that Jordan was not going to lose that series. And
it was overtime. I mean, after they won game 2, it was like, it's over.
No, game 3 was a tough game that went into overtime.
No, I know. Like, I'm not saying the series wasn't tough beyond that. I'm saying it was over. Like, even if they were going to be close games, there was a new sheriff in town.
Yeah, the one win that the Lakers got, game 1 at the stadium, that they were up by 2, and San Perkins bombs away a three-pointer. They win it, and then Jordan took a shot that went around and out that would have put them back in front. The Lakers got the rebound, got fouled, made free throws, and they ended up winning that game. And a lot of people, especially a lot of national people, are saying, that's it. They've got all the experience. The Bulls don't have experience of being in the finals or whatever. It really didn't matter because that was the only game the Lakers would win in that series.
Unbelievable. And, yeah, that was the start, and I think also one of the biggest moments of that series, besides a bunch of like the great switch of the hand move by Jordan in the series.
That was in game 2.
Yeah, and also in game 2, I believe, this is where I was getting to, wasn't that the series in which Phil Jackson said, hey, Scotty, gonna need you to guard Magic, and then it was, again, over.
They switched it around. Well, no, Magic did score points against Scottie.
No, but do you remember that? It was a big moment.
Yeah, very well. But for a while, it kind of caught Magic Johnson off guard.
Oh, yeah.
And Scottie was a couple of inches taller than Michael, and he was able to take full advantage of that whole situation. The crowd, of course, went nuts. Then when they got out to California for game 3 in the Forum, Magic was scoring a few points then as well.
Yeah, but you're right, there was a shock factor, I think, like where it probably took a half for Magic to kind of get over the mental hurdle of, Jesus, they're putting this guy on me. Where, you know, which, I mean, made every little bit of sense. But it was like, great, now I've got maximum effort meets maximum talents guarding me. And it did fluster Magic. Now, Magic was not at the peak of his powers at that point. You know what I mean? He was past his prime.
He was still pretty good, though.
but still pretty good, no doubt. I mean, still
a year
pretty
later,
good,
he was on the dream team.
Yeah, he was. He just wasn't, you know, he wasn't peak.
A year later, he had announced his retirement when they discovered that he had encountered that virus. And,
yeah, HIV.
So he didn't play, but then he came out of retirement to play with the Dream Team. He also came out of retirement to play in that All-Star game in Orlando even prior to that, and he was the MVP of the game. And he took turns at the end of that game guarding against his good friend Isaiah Thomas and doing against Michael, and they went back and forth, and the crowd went nuts, and the MVP ended up being Magic Johnson.
Uh-huh. All right, so the Lakers are a trigger of yours, but that was a good, healthy, positive, objective look at the Bulls and Magic Johnson and the Lakers in that time. Okay, here's what I want you to do for me. Rank these Lakers in from worst to best. Ready? Three of them. LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson.
Kobe was Shaq, of course.
Yeah.
By the way, the Lakers,
I left Shaq out.
The Lakers illegally were able to acquire Shaquille O'Neal. That was a situation
oh,
where
yeah.
they,
what was
they
the,
tampered.
Was tampering?
He was still the property of the Orlando Magic. And the Lakers wanted to get Shaquille O'Neal, of course, and the NBA wanted to get Shaquille O'Neal as well. And so they basically told Orlando, right, when Orlando was trying to fire a complaint for tampering, they said, don't even bother. We're not going to do anything. Let it go, because you're not going to get ruled. And so they told him to let it go. And then later on in his life, Shaquille O'Neal said that he regretted leaving Orlando to go to the Lakers. His last games with Orlando were all against the Bulls in the NBA Finals in 96.
And that's when you started to kind of hate the Lakers, right?
A little bit, yeah. But I'll tell you what, when I was a lot younger and the Lakers had Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, and then eventually they got Wilt Chamberlain, and they used to play the Celtics so many times, mm-hmm. and they almost never could beat them, whether it was with Russell and some of the other great players they had, like John Havlicek or whatever. Boston always had a way to beat them. And in 1969, the Celtics finished in fourth place in the East. The Lakers, they had Wilt Chamberlain for the first time with West and Gail Goodrich and whatnot. Baylor was hurt at that point. And in the NBA Finals, the home team won every game except till Game 7. And the Celtics, they seemed to get every bounce of the ball, every thing late. And there was a shot, I think, by Don Nelson. It hit the rim, went high in the air.
Oh, my God.
And it went in the bucket. And there were no three-point baskets in those days either, just two-point baskets. And they got away with it. And I remember the game ended. They had a whole batch of helium-filled balloons inside a net high above the place, and they were going to release them when they won the game. Of course, the Lakers didn't win. And remember, Red Auerbach, after the game, he gets on TV and he starts screaming, they can eat their balloons. You know, Red Auerbach was a great coach. Well, what a cocky SOB. What an absolute everybody that was not Celtic coaches or fans or whatever, hated the guy's guts.
Wow. But he won, so you had to line up before him and put up with his crap. That's like,
and there was a lot of crap to put up with.
Yeah, sounds like it. By the way, I'm a little flummoxed here. There's a text from the 630, and it says confirmed that game was in Chicago, not Nashville. And I assume this texter is referring to the game we were talking about in the first round against the Predators, where Hossa ultimately comes out of the penalty box.
Yeah, that was in Chicago. That was at the United
States. I thought it was in Nashville, like at least just sitting here right now.
No. Then they went back to Nashville for the next game, and the Hawks clobbered him in the next game, and they ended
up moving
on to the second
round. Oh, they did? Okay, man. I don't have that, like, right there.
No, I was at that game.
Apparently. Oh, no, I'm sure you were. That was the original genesis of the conversation, that you were there. And I am going to Nashville tomorrow, and I was just looking to get a little bit. I wanted to hear what you thought of the city And then you said you had a recommendation for me in Nashville in terms of where to go to
Not
eat.
A specific recommendation, but there is the walkway that the arena is on, and it's right across the river. There's a wide river there, and on the other side is the LP Stadium where the Titans play. But it's not really walking distance, but it's about a 3-minute car ride from one place to the other. Along that area where the arena is, then the rest of it, it's kind of like a version of Nashville's own version of Rush Street. That's what it's kind of like. It's really kind of cool.
Okay.
All kinds of souvenir shops, everything, and the food down there is magnificent.
Yeah, now I've heard that. So I got like 4 days with which to work. So hopefully I will, I'll be able to. Hey, Grobber, I got to take a break. You got to go, or you want to hang on through the break and we do one more quick segment? It's your call,
buddy. I can
hang
with you for another segment.
Love you so much. We're taking a break. It's Mark Grody and Les Grobstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Welcome back in on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, along with Les Grobstein. I'm Mark Grody for a few more minutes. Grobber gearing up for his show, which will be midnight to 5 tonight, Thursday into the Friday. So final day of the week for you, Les. What have we planned for this occasion tonight?
Well, as we go into the weekend, the Cubs and the Brewers are tied for first place. Milwaukee, they did come up with an easy 7-2. Well, it wasn't easy until maybe the last few innings, but they came from behind and beat the Reds in Cincinnati 7-2. Cincinnati was getting great starting pitching, and as they often do, their bullpen was awful, and the crew took advantage of it, and they won the game by a score of 7-2. Cubs were off. They opened a big series with the Cardinals over the weekend. Of course, St. Louis, they've been awful of late, too, and with Flaherty, their best starting pitcher, out hurt, and he might be out for most of the rest of the season, if not all the rest of it, because of a problem that he suffered. And he may not be able to pitch anymore. And that's ever since that injury came up, that team has pretty much nosedived.
Crazy.
Cardinals were in first place, and they really hit the wall, and the Cubs were able to take advantage. So they're going to have 100% capacity allowed at Wrigley Field starting tomorrow. Uh-huh. And there'll be some fans there wearing red, but it'll be pretty much a loud, boisterous Cub crowd. White Sox are just a couple outs away from winning over the Toronto Blue Jays after Toronto beat them in the most recent meeting between the two clubs. Sox are leading by a score of 5-2. And then the Bears and Justin Field have come to a deal, a 4-year contract for $19 million. So the rookie quarterback, and there's no guarantee, of course, that he'll play in the opener when they play the Rams in L.A. after the 3 exhibition games. But, Andy Dalton's been pretty much designated as the guy who will be their starting QB. And the Bulls' Coby White, of course, they have been out since the end of the regular season again. But White has undergone shoulder surgery, and he will be re-examined in about 4 months. Hopefully he'll be okay by the time they start the season this coming fall.
That sucks, doesn't it? I mean, like, I'm unsure of what Coby White ultimately is in the NBA, but he is just going into his third year. And to, like, lose that potential progress, there is a
stunt. At least it's not a knee injury.
Factor. No, you're absolutely right, but I'm saying whatever the 4 months. No, you're right. There are worse things that could be happening than Coby White probably not starting the season with the team, but around some point in time. But just relative to hoops, I mean, that sucks for him.
Yeah, it does, and I think they've realized he's not pretty much going to be a point guard, but a 2 guard. And one of the things they have to add between now and the start of next season is a point guard, but having a guy like Coby White maybe be the sixth man of the year possibility. Remember, that's what Ben Gordon was when he was with the Bulls. He would come off the bench, and he was the sixth man of the year. And yeah. I don't know if he was ever the sixth man of the year, but when Steve Kerr played with the Bulls, he was a key guy off the bench for them too. So a guy like Kobe White, he can be a terrific player on a hopefully eventually winning team, which they're not yet. They're good.
You know what he's like? He's like a guy like who came up as a starting pitcher, so to speak. And now they're finding out that Kobe White might be better off in the bullpen, so to
like
speak.
Like Dennis Eckersley was with Oakland?
Well, yeah, you have a specialty now, and your specialty is going to be coming in off the bullpen. You're going to be the sixth man. It's going to make you millions, and you're going to be talked about more now as a real dude in the NBA. But you're not going to be the starting point guard anymore.
Yeah, but he's still going to get a lot of starting time as if he were a starting player. And I think
he's a good important finisher. Player that, he's a really good finisher.
No question. He's a good kid, too, by the way.
Oh, I've never met him, actually. I have not covered a Bulls game for...
You'll be impressed when you do get a chance, which you will at some point.
Yeah, no, he seems like everything that I've heard and read about him, like he's got that part down. The part that he doesn't have down is being a dynamic playmaking point guard in the NBA. He's just not. I mean, we've all seen it. And, you know, you don't say, like, just after 2 years, like, give up on him. But it's getting close. It's getting close to
that
point.
No, they're not getting close to giving up. I think that
Arturas Karnišovic
has different plans. Maybe he does. I don't know. But I think that he is part of the Bulls' plans down the road. I don't think they're giving up.
Absolutely. Less. I'm saying he wouldn't be a starter going forward. Get it? Like they'll bring somebody else in from the outside, maybe, and even if he was healthy, he would not be a starter. Right?
By the way, Sacks do win. They just ended the game on the south side. 5-2, they beat the Toronto Blue Jays.
All right, well, now you have just all sorts of awesome stuff to talk about. Like you said, Cubs, Cardinals tomorrow. The White Sox have just won.
And the Milwaukee Bucks, who looked like they were dead in the water, they got home and they jumped all over Brooklyn early. Then it turned out to be a hell of a game, and Milwaukee beat Brooklyn 86-83, so the Nets now lead 2-1. And by 86-83, that was a legitimate score. It wasn't one of those 135-134 games where nobody played any defense. Needless to say, both teams actually played some defense in this game.
Les, you are gorgeous. Thank you so much for coming on like you do, and I'll be listening to you at midnight tonight, buddy.
We'll be listening when are you on on the WB Club over the weekend?
No, I'm going. Remember, I'm going to Nashville.
Oh, you're going to Nashville, so you will miss that too.
It's a guy by the name of Rick Camp will be working with Steve Rosenblum on Saturday.
Well, I know Rick and we worked with him many times as well. Have a good, safe trip down there to Music City, USA. And like I said, I think you'll enjoy it down there. It's a kind of a fun city.
Thanks, Grobber. Talk to you later. Thank you to everybody for listening, calling, texting. I certainly appreciate that. Thank you very much to Bruce Levine, Megan Montemurro, and Hub Arkish for coming on the show, and also Grobber Adam Stadzinski for producing the show. I'm Mark Grody. I probably won't talk to you for like a week or so. I feel like I've really gotten close to a lot of people out there getting to do some of these evenings. So I'll talk to you like in a week, probably from the Bears on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Talk to you later.
Kudos, Helene, on a job.